My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour...
On July 11th, 2021, in case we replay the show.
Yes, and it's only 107, so we're actually doing pretty good for...
We'll replay it in the winter when we're not sweaty.
For high noon.
Yeah.
So our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape is everything John Deere. You need tractors, implements, parts, service. Go by and see them. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. They also have, they've still got some Honda generators in stock. You might want to go by and grab one while they last because apparently...
Get your PG&E email.
Yeah, I guess Honda's having like a shortage in California, so a little difficult to get right now. So go by and get them while they last. And also steel products. If you get the hankering to go out and do a little yard work, which you probably want to do about 3 in the morning, go by and see them. They got a lot of steel products in stock, and they should be able to fix you up.
Ta-da.
There you go.
Okay. So our guest today...
Yes.
...is Peter Friedman.
Peter Friedman.
Yes. And you can always find everything about the show at wethepeopleradio.us. Sometimes I let Bill say the .us.
Yeah, but sometimes I'm busy and I can only do one thing at a time, so forgive me for that.
Sometimes Bill tied up in his one thing.
And my one thing.
He's doing his one thing. And if you haven't seen City Slickers, you don't know what that means, but that's if you looked up, you probably could YouTube Curly One Thing, because Curly, that was his thing. One thing. Did you ever find out at the end of the movie what the one thing was? I don't remember that.
I don't think so.
Huh. No. I just stole the line and applied it to Bill and forgot about all the rest of it, except for the coffee grinder scene, you know, where he sets causes a stampede. Okay, I remember that part. So, it has nothing to do with what we're talking about today. I know you'll find that shocking. We're going to talk about the CIA today.
Yay!
Yeah.
Always fun.
Yeah, the CIA. It turns out they're not just an agency; they're prophets.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're prophets. Oh. And you know, you will find out why. And their prophecy actually is on the webpage for today with our guest Peter Friedman. Mr. Friedman has a really, really wide and varied background, and we have had him on. I checked this out last night. First time he was on with us was October 2012. That was like, I don't know, right after we started a long time ago. We've done a bunch of stuff on Islam with him. And so if you'd like some really good information about what's going on there, that is always timeless. Please go back and look at that. We've also done some terrific shows with him on home defense because he is an NRA instructor and has been for a really long time. I've got his whole bio on there. He's got lots of firearms credentials. We did a show. If you really need a laugh, my time in the FBI, that was a really worthwhile show to listen to.
That was a classic.
And I don't want to wreck it for you, but a gun does fall in the toilet, and Mr. Friedman didn't do it. So you can guess who might have, but you'll have to listen to the show just to confirm that it was the FBI who dropped their gun in the toilet. And he's just been studying and lecturing, and he always has these new ideas. He sent me this article, and I thought, all right, we're not missing this. Very timely. So it's an unclassified report, but I don't want to blow what it's about because I don't know how he wants to do it. So, Mr. Friedman, are you...
I am here.
You're on the hostage phone line? We should probably have a safe word.
But we're glad to have you.
Thanks for coming back
on
with us.
Well, I'm very pleased to be had. So I'm rooting around. I must have too much time on my hands anyway. I'm rooting around and trying to discover where all of this stuff started. Okay, all of these life science, bioscience, experimentation, and stuff like that. Where did all this come from? And in doing so, I came up with what was originally a classified report by the CIA Directorate of Intelligence, which has since been unclassified, which kind of surprises me because, you know, if I were them, I would want to keep this classified. But then nobody ever goes to prison.
That's true.
I wonder when the Durham report will be issued. So
don't hold your breath on that one.
Oh, no, I'll be dead in an hour. So can't hold my breath that long. So looking at this, it becomes very interesting because it's entitled The Darker Bioweapons Future. So something occurred way back when, 25 years ago or so, that sparked this interest in the darker bioweapons future. Now, I think it may have had something to do, and I've seen some dots that I've connected between Saddam Hussein and his bioweapons research and everything. Of course, we gave a lot of that research to him during the Iran-Iraq War back in the 80s. So if you start to connect some of these dots, a lot of stuff came out of our weapons lab at Fort Detrick in Maryland, and when they shut that down, it actually was offloaded to the research department, biomedical research department of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Now, that's been in the news recently, which kind of also sparked my interest because there was a lot of emails that went back and forth that have now surfaced between North Carolina, University of North Carolina research, Fauci, Peter Daszak, who is the guy who runs the EcoHealth Alliance, who laundered the money from the NIH and Fauci going to the Wuhan lab. So all of this is really fascinating, okay? It's kind of like, why would our government during World War II have cooperated with Hitler and IG Farben manufacturing Zyklon B gas for the gas chambers? You know, it has that feeling to it. So we're looking at this CIA report, and I have not seen this come up anywhere by anybody. But let me read some stuff here off of this report. And again, it is in a PDF version on your website. It's also there pictorially. But it starts off with a panel of life science experts convened for the Strategic Assessments Group by the National Academy of Sciences, which is part of the National Institutes of Health, of course, concluded that advances in biotechnology, coupled with the difficulty in detecting nefarious biological activity, have the potential to create a much more dangerous biological warfare threat. Now, what's fascinating to me is that this report was issued on November 3rd, 2003. That's 18 years ago. So when you read the rest of this, this is a roadmap for the Chinese at Wuhan. It says that traditional intelligence means for monitoring weapons of mass destruction development could prove inadequate to deal with the threat from these advanced biological weapons. So keep thinking of the Wuhan lab and all of this stuff with the original SARS, H1N1. This is all resulting from what was discovered and warned about 18 years ago. Detection of, reading further, third bullet point here, detection of related activities, particularly the development of novel bioengineered pathogens. That's COVID-19.
Oh, absolutely.
They have called it a novel virus. It is bioengineered, and it is certainly a pathogen. So detection of these related activities will depend increasingly on more specific human intelligence and will necessitate a closer and perhaps qualitatively different working relationship between the intelligence and biological sciences communities. So one has to ask themselves, while we're talking about COVID-19, what did the intelligence community in the United States know, and when did they know it? Okay, we go back to Senator Howard Baker. Okay, what did they know, and when did they know it? Moving down here in the document, the threat from advanced bioweapons. In the last several decades, now this is very interesting, remember this, this is written November 2003. So if you're talking about 20 years before, you're talking about what? 1973? 1983? And I'll get into that in a minute. So in the last several decades prior to 2003, the world has witnessed a knowledge explosion in the life sciences based on an understanding of genes and how they work. Now think of DNA. Think of all the law enforcement cold cases. And I've worked on a number of cold cases, you know, in my career, trying to figure out exactly what happened. And now, all of a sudden, where there is, in the last generation, where there has been DNA collected at a crime site, you see on the news all of the time how all of a sudden somebody who got away with it for 30 years, they've now been arrested and prosecuted because of the DNA explosion. So according to panel members, practical applications of this new and burgeoning knowledge base will accelerate dramatically and unpredictably. Okay? And they quote that in life sciences, we are now where information technology was in the 1960s. So in other words, here in the 1960s, you had the explosion of computers, fax machines. Jesus, I still have my original Brother fax machine using the hydrostatic paper. I figure one of these days it may be worth something. I still have my original Apple computer that had 64K in it. Wow. No hard drive. And you had to use, you go over to Radio Shack and you buy a $10 cassette tape recorder. Okay, and I'm sure anybody born in the last generation has no idea what I'm talking about. And you would buy programs, very short little programs on a cassette, and then you hook up the cassette recorder to the Apple, okay, and you would download that into the existing drive on Apple, and then you could play with it, but as soon as you shut off the machine, it would go away. You'd have to do it all over again. Okay.
Just some of the fun meat we used to have while we were cooking our food over a fire.
There you go. Yeah, your biofuel density. Okay. And then they go on to say the same science that may cure some of our worst diseases could be used to create the world's most frightening weapons. This is almost 20 years ago. Where are people going to prison?
Yeah.
Okay. Australian researchers, now I am very interested in the fact that this talks about Australia researchers, and ivermectin, which we'll discuss later on today, was created and developed in Australia. Then you see all of a sudden the Chinese and this lovely chairman, Xi Jinping, okay, personal friend of Joe Biden, has advocated maybe for the bombing of Australia. Did you see that 3 or 4 weeks ago?
No, I missed that one.
Oh yeah, his foreign minister came out in a press conference and said if Australia doesn't stop screwing with China, you know, they may consider bombing certain areas of Australia.
Oh,
what the?
And that made no headline. which is kind of interesting. Hold that thought, Mr. Friedman.
It was on.
Let's take on Tucker Carlson.
So
it's been some random thing. I'm sure CNN covered it because they're awesome at that. We're going to take a really swift break. We'll be right back. Our guest is Peter Friedman, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
And topple their regime. Those men in black with their mansion suitcases, where everything's on a need-to-know basis. Agents got that swagger. Everyone's so cloak and dagger. I'm feeling nervous, but I'm really kind of wishing for an undercover mission. That's when the red alert came on the radio, and I put my earpiece on. Got my dark sunglasses on, and I had my weapon drawn. So I get my handcuffs, my cyanide pills, my classified dossier. Tapping the phones like, yeah. Shredding the files like, yeah. And then my rise to all the enemy's spies. I gotta neutralize today. It's a party in the CIA. Yeah, it's a party in the CIA. Yeah, it's a party in the CIA. I've done a couple of crazy things that have almost gotten me dismissed. Like terminate some head of state who wasn't even on my list. Burn that microfilm, buddy, will you? I'd tell you why, but then I'd have to kill you. You need a quickie confession. We'll start a waterboarding session. No hurry on this South American dictator. I'll assassinate him later. That's when he walked right in my laser sights. And my silencer was on. And my silencer was on. And another target's gone. Yeah, we got our flag up all over the world. From Kazakhstan to Bombay. Paying the bribes like, yeah. Plugging the leaks like, yeah. Interrogating the scum of the earth. We'll break them by the break of day. Yeah. It's a party in the CIA. Yeah. It's a party in the CIA.
What would we do without Weird Al?
Yeah.
We'd have to listen to the regular song. It's by that Cyrus person.
We'd have no fun at all.
We heard it at Disney World. We were on a boat, and all of a sudden they started, it was called Party in the USA. I'm like, what song is this?
Wait a minute,
this
she stole that from Weird Al.
Yeah, the words are all wrong. It wasn't funny or anything. Wrecked everything. So, Mr. Friedman, let's go back to the sadness at Australia. What the heck?
Okay, I love Dr. D'Amato. Okay. So, going back to the CIA report 18 years ago, okay, Australian researchers recently inadvertently showed that the virulence of mousepox virus can be significantly enhanced by the incorporation of a standard immunoregulator gene, in other words, something that can suppress your immune system. A technique that could be applied to other naturally occurring pathogens, such as anthrax or smallpox, greatly increasing their lethality. Okay, this is November 2003. Remember that Obama had to deal with H1N1, the swine flu, in 2009. 6 years later. Gee. I wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, you keep going down here. It says a mild pathogen, okay, which essentially today in young people and stuff, COVID is, okay, there's a 99.8% recovery rate, a mild pathogen that when combined with its antidote becomes virulent. Designer bioweapon agents created to be antibiotic resistant or to evade an immune response. Weaponized gene therapy vectors that affect permanent change in the victim's genetic makeup, or a stealth virus which could lie dormant inside a victim for an extended period before being triggered. Okay. For example, one panelist cited the possibility of a stealth virus attack that could cripple a large portion of people in their 40s with severe arthritis, concealing its hostile origin and leaving a country with massive health and economic problems. This could have been written 6 months ago.
Wow.
Unbelievable. So now, let me go back to this one thing here. It says a mild pathogen that, when combined with its antidote, becomes virulent. Let me tell you about this good friend of mine. This guy, who is in his 50s, who I have known for a long time, especially through aviation stuff. So he comes down with COVID. This is about 4 months ago. He comes down with COVID, stays home, lots of fluids, you know, Tylenol, whatever it was, and throws it off. And then, because his wife is a virologist with a major HMO hospital chain, has a chat with him and talks him into taking the Pfizer vaccine.
Oops.
He gets deathly sick. We're talking deathly sick. So let's read this sentence again. A particularly insidious example would be a mild pathogen that, when combined with its antidote, the Pfizer vaccine, becomes virulent. This is a roadmap.
Wow. That does seem a little frightening.
It is. It's scary. This is an absolute roadmap that I think in the last 20 years or 18 years at least has been just followed bullet point by bullet point with the Chinese. The resulting diversity, reading further, the resulting diversity of new biowarfare agents could enable such a broad range of attack scenarios that it would be virtually impossible to anticipate and defend against. As a result, there could be a considerable lag time in developing effective biodefense measures. Oh, you mean the entire year of 2020?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. However, effective countermeasures, once developed, could be leveraged against a range of bioweapon agents, citing current research aimed at developing protocols for augmenting common elements of the body's response to disease rather than treating individual diseases. Now, the last time we talked about this, I was reading right off Moderna's website, if you recall.
Mm-hmm.
And Moderna had a summary of how the mRNA vaccine works, and they specifically, in print, said this is biological software. Okay? So, we can read right back here, current research aimed at developing protocols for augmenting common elements. You there?
Yeah, somebody
sorry
just didn't
that.
Shut their phone off. And it wasn't me either. Not yet. So I'm scrambling.
Current research, 2003. Current research aimed at developing protocols for augmenting common elements of the body's response to disease, think mRNA, rather than treating individual diseases. So in other words, they plant the operating system into your cells, and then depending upon what biowarfare agent is prevailing at the time, they can now put an app into your body to work with the operating system, which is Pfizer and Moderna and AstraZeneca, which nobody likes anywhere in the world now, okay, on an individual basis. Well, what are we trying to fight this year? Think of the seasonal flu vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
They never know what strain is going to be coming, and so if you take a flu shot, maybe it's got 50% efficacy to it. Maybe what's in that flu shot seasonally will handle whatever the coming flu happens to be, which people really don't know. Okay, so under implications for warning, the experts emphasize that because the processes, techniques, and equipment and know-how needed for advanced bioagent development are dual use. So both commercially and militarily. It will be extremely difficult to distinguish between legitimate biological research activities and production of advanced bioweapon agents. And just lastly here, in the interest of time, we go to the last bullet point. For the bioscience community at large, they need to aid the government by acting as a living sensor web. At international conferences and university labs, think of University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and through informal networks to identify and alert it to new technical advances with weaponization potential. Now, there are a number of informal networks that have sprung up in the last year and a half since COVID hit. They have all been censored. They have all been, and we're going to get into that in a few minutes, they have all been taken off the internet because they don't want the government, they do not want people to know what is going on with these informal networks. This is like Dr. Peter McCulloch. It's like the frontline COVID doctors and their website, the FLCCC.org. They don't want them to know that because if you know that and you start to research what has been going on, it is going to lead precisely to what we're discussing today. And that just throws a wrench into everything. It screws up the big pharma, who now is charging $3,000 for a dose of remdesivir. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But this is frightening as hell. It's amazing. This has been going on.
Yeah, the fact that it was 2012. Or 2003. I mean, from 2003 until 2021... This has been sitting. When was this declassified anyway? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. I've filed a Freedom of Information Act request, and we'll see what I get back.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, how long was this available? I specifically like one of the points here. You're maybe going to hit that a little bit more later, but when it says other biologists have synthesized a key smallpox viral protein and shown its effectiveness in blocking critical aspects of the human immune response, it's like, well, I could totally see a great application for that. Never.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
And right. I think COVID-19 was a trial run.
Yeah. And then they've got a nice polio one. And it's like, what the heck? I mean, these are the weird, immoral things that we hear from our guests on China. And they talk about how they're doing weirdo, you know, animal people experiments trying to make, trying to make male mice pregnant, stuff like that. You know, they're doing odd things that they want to use on people.
Sounds like Joseph Mengele.
Mm-hmm. It's true. In a sick way, I've laughed about this many times. I'm like, I bet Mengele's down there in hell trying to make a deal with the devil. It's like, send me back. My people are finally in charge.
He's probably a buddy of Saul Alinsky.
I think he's got a lot of friends. I mean, I think really, honestly, if Mengele has any kind of view into what's going on, I'm sure he'd look around and go, I wouldn't even be a pariah now. I could be a big shot like Fauci.
That's scary. Have you ever heard of Dr. Robert Malone?
No.
Dr. Robert Malone in 1989 was the actual inventor of mRNA vaccine technology.
Oh, surprise.
Dr. Robert Malone. Now, you ought to look him up. It's very interesting because Dr. Malone was on several months ago with Tucker Carlson. The podcast was immediately taken down from YouTube. And when Dr. Malone was on with Carlson, he went through a whole litany of how all scientific discussion had been censored. And Malone came up, this is 1989 now, so it's what, 10, 12 years before the CIA reports came out. And he was warning people back then that this was the coming thing. And it had to do with the introduction of what he called RNA transfection system using cationic liposomes. And this is what he published in 1989. In 1990, okay, 13 years now before the CIA report came out, he demonstrated that mRNA could deliver genetic information into the cell to produce proteins within living cell tissue.
Hmm. Imagine
this
that.
This is 1989. Okay. Everything about Malone has been removed from Wikipedia and their entry on mRNA vaccines. The person who Wikipedia is now crediting with the development and the creation of mRNA vaccines is the researcher who works for BioNTech, which is the German subsidiary of Pfizer. It is BioNTech who is manufacturing all of the Pfizer vaccine. To Dr. Karika. Okay? So all of this history is being manipulated, which is very strange, because the original discovery of mRNA drug delivery, okay, is accredited to the researchers at the Salk Institute in the University of California in Los Angeles. Very interesting. You know, you keep looking it up. So the Hungarian biochemist, Katalin Karikó, is all of a sudden being praised now by the media as the inventor of mRNA vaccines, which is absolutely false. It started with Dr. Malone back in 1989. Karikó is the senior vice president of BioNTech. And they're the guys in Germany who created Pfizer's vaccine. Very interesting. Karikó,
like,
by the way...
Well, it's a stupid idea.
In Hungary, when it was under the Soviets, he was also a police informant, which lends a little interest to the whole thing.
So it sounds like Pfizer had a little head start on the
leg up, as they
technology
say.
On the vaccine.
Mr. Friedman, let's take one more quick break, and then we'll be right back with you. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Party in the CIA. Need a country to stabilize. Look no further, we're your guy. We're your guy. We got snazzy suits and ties. Suits and ties. And a better dental plan than the FBI. Better put your hands up and get in the van, or else you'll get blown away. Brainwashing moles like it. We only torture the folks we don't like. You're probably gonna be okay.
You're gonna be okay.
Yeah. It's a party in the CIA. Yeah. It's a party in the CIA. You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. No, we can't slow down, we can't hold back, though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.
I would play that on every break if I could. It's like my favorite song. It seems to go with every topic, too. All right, back to you, Mr. Friedman. What other bad news do you have for us?
Okay.
Oh, and by the way, there's some true factor of truth or whatever, you know. It's not the Snopes people, but it's that kind of an idea that says that guy didn't invent the thing in 1989, that's false. And I'm like, good Lord, we're going to have everything on paper, and we're going to have to crawl back through the archives and see, because everything online, I mean, you don't know. Is this actual truth, or is this just their truth, or is it sanitized history?
It's all being sanitized right now. So Malone was on with Tucker Carlson on Fox on June 24th. That's just last month. Mm-hmm. And he was interviewed by Tucker. And what's really weird is I cannot any longer find the interview. So
it's just an accident. Just a little mistake.
It
fell off the server.
Yeah, it just accidentally disappeared from the internet. What the heck?
Well, he can do that. So what he said, amongst other things, was a significant part of why we don't have adequate data is because the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, purposefully decided not to require stringent post-vaccination data collection and evaluation. Hmm. So now I went on the CDC's website and the FDA's website, and the implication that they decided that they didn't need to do that is there. I mean, they freely admit it because they know that, you know, 95% at least of everybody in this country, they're not going to go do any of this research. You know, they're just going to watch the mainstream media, and that's the end of it. So one of the other things that Malone pointed out was that no risk-benefit analyses have been done by the NIH, by the NIAID, by anybody over here in the United States. So he has now basically concluded that the COVID-19 vaccinations could be the most dangerous medical product we've ever seen. And here is why. The CDC, right on their website, the CDC reported rate of death from COVID-19 shots, people taking the vaccines, now exceeds the reported death rate of more than 70 vaccines combined over the last 30 years. They're reporting that over 11,000 people have died just from the vaccine. That's on the VAERS program website.
And that, by their own admission, is what, 1% of what is reported goes on VAERS?
Yeah. Well, it's like there's only 11 million illegals in the United States. They've been saying this for the last 30 years.
You're right.
It's a constant.
Okay, so they're all sterile, and they're not producing more offspring. Yeah, okay.
No.
I have a bridge I'd like to send you. Okay. The vaccine, therefore, based on the reported death rate from taking the vaccine, is almost 500 times deadlier than the seasonal flu vaccine. These COVID vaccine shots are 7 times more dangerous, based on this report, than the pandemic H1N1 vaccine, which only had a 25 death per million severe side effect rate. So when they did a peer review risk benefit analysis, which was published in the medical journal Vaccines, essentially the same day Malone spoke to Tucker Carlson back on June 24th, it revealed that the number needed to vaccinate to prevent one COVID death using the Pfizer vaccine is somewhere between 9,000 and 50,000. So to put that in perspective, because I love numbers, for every 3 COVID-19 deaths prevented, 2 are killed by the vaccine. You got that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Has there ever been a drug put on the market that has had this level of serious side effects that they've allowed to, you know, continue being administered, do you know of?
Yes, the only one that comes close is thalidomide.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, well, nothing bad happened there.
Yeah.
Oh, well, no, not if you want three arms and two heads.
That are real short.
That are real short. So this is
terrifying.
One of the reasons. Yeah, Dr. Malone now is persona non grata anywhere. And you will not find him essentially anywhere. I haven't looked on Wikipedia under his name this morning yet, but, you know, I'm assuming that he is gone. Okay, so let's talk about the safety of these vaccines again, okay? And we're talking about the Moderna biological software with, you know, injected apps and Pfizer coming out of Germany, which scares the hell out of me anyway. So what you're dealing with is the number needed to vaccinate to prevent one death. Well, hardly anybody anymore is dying from COVID. We've got that all figured out. So how many people do you have to vaccinate to stop one death?
Well,
that's a very difficult number to come up with.
But
how do you tell?
The thing that we can't forget to mention is you used exactly the right wording. They're dying from, but the problem is the statistics are counting died with, and they're not not differentiating between the two. So first off, it was people were dying. That was just that was the statistic. Then it was tested positive for, which told me there was some funny business going on, because who cares who tests positive? I mean, if they're not sick, who cares? And then, dying with, well, I don't care. They probably died with psoriasis, too, but that doesn't mean psoriasis killed them. So we should be, and the fact that we had, I mean, I can hear somebody screaming in the background out there in the world that, and there was no seasonal flu. And, of course, you know, it's because we all wore masks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, so knock off, out of the 600,000 deaths in America, knock off at least 250,000, 300,000, close to half of them, who actually died from the seasonal flu, but they called it COVID.
Mm-hmm. Or they had, there were people who, had lead poisoning, you know, they had gunshot wounds. I mean, technically they died from lead poisoning, but they wound up with COVID on their...
Yeah.
Well, they tested positive in autopsy.
So it's like, wait a second. What exactly, you know, and to just make... thing that's interesting is, you know, when you have a crisis, I think about George Washington, you know, at Valley Forge. Two things you didn't talk about, the food and the weather, right? Those were like off limits. Yeah. Okay, men, we don't talk about the food or the weather. Anything else is on the table.
There you go.
So
that's
here,
very
you,
funny
you, here you have a, you know, a crisis, a nationwide crisis, and all you do is talk about it all day long and be afraid, 24/7. And I mean, that's not even healthy, actually, even if you should be afraid. So on the flip side, if being afraid would actually help you, thinking about that the whole time isn't how you save yourself. I mean, they don't teach the military that. Go into a combat situation and be afraid of getting shot. That's what you should think about all the time. It's like, no, you don't. You're worthless then.
This is very true.
Stuff frustrates me.
Matter of fact, there's an interesting study that was done by a colonel that I know who wrote a book called On Killing. And you can find it. It's out there. And it's very interesting because with all the research he did, he discovered that in Vietnam, for example, our guys, for every North Vietnamese or VC that was killed in Vietnam, we expended something like 50,000 rounds because a lot of our guys were over there and kept shooting in the air. And he went back and started to research in Korea and World War II. And he discovered that the same problem existed in both Korea and World War II. that our guys were over there, and they would have somebody in their sights, and they would shoot over their heads, trying to convince them to go away or to surrender, rather than to take them out.
That's not a good strategy.
No, it's not a good strategy, and it rolls into all of this nonsense about defunding the police and everything else. Let me tell you something.
Having spent my time in the leg.
In uniform, I didn't want to shoot anybody. I would do anything not to. Okay? I take additional risks just not to have to go to that extent. Because, first of all, the paperwork is horrendous afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, and then you've got to go through counseling, you've got to go through internal affairs, you've got to have a psych eval. You know, man, I'll tell you something, cops will do almost anything, even put themselves at risk, not to have to use lethal force. Because it's just, it's not in their nature. It's not even in human nature. So, I mean, all of this stuff is just baloney coming out. Anyway, going back to this, if we have another minute or so.
Yeah, we have two.
Good. The efficacy rates for COVID vaccines are merely the reduction in probability of requiring hospitalizations. Thus, the vaccines likely reduce your suffering if you do catch COVID. And I keep coming back to Zycam, the older over-the-counter, you know, Zycam if you get a cold. And then there's Tamiflu, all right? Tamiflu by Gilead Sciences down here in the Bay Area. You know, Tamiflu reduces the severity of the flu if you get it. Zycam reduces the severity of a cold, and it makes it a lot shorter, and you get over it quicker. That is the actual researched and reported efficacy of these vaccines. That's why they keep talking about having to come up with booster shots now.
Right.
Okay? It has nothing to do with variants. It has to do with the fact that your body will slough off the spike proteins that have been put into your body by the vaccine to theoretically shorten and lessen the severity of COVID if you catch it. It does not prevent it. Okay? You get no lifelong immunity from it. They shouldn't even bother calling it a vaccine because it really isn't. It's a biological software. So, how much time we got going here now?
Well, a few seconds, like 10. So we'll come back after the top of the hour. And we will chat more with our guest, Peter Friedman, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You got to saddle up your boys. You got to draw a hard line. When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon. We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff.
And what do you have for us, Bill?
Well, we have a sponsor this hour. It's Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer.
Huh.
Yeah. They're located up at 3119 Twin View Boulevard. They're
just right by the smoking hot homeless camp?
Oh, yeah, it's not there anymore.
It caught on fire.
Caught on fire and burned down there Friday.
Why was I laughing?
I don't know.
There
was nobody.
Nervous,
yeah, they had already
response.
Moved out, but yeah, it's now a burnt field. Yeah, they're just two, Pape Machinery is just two doors south of Phil's Propeller. They're easy to find there on Twin View Boulevard. And they're in Shasta Lake City. Anything John Deere, give them a call and, they can get you fixed up. Part sales service, they do it all right there. Or give them a call at 226-9226 and you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
spelled P-A-P-E.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
You got it.
Deceptively simple, but often confused.
Correct. Thank you for that.
That could be their new tagline, Pape Machinery. Deceptively simple, but often confused. Yeah.
I'll fly that by him. I'm thinking probably not, though.
Corporate not going to like it?
Probably not.
You just go to work for a smaller company. Somebody we can manipulate.
Yeah, you're going to get manipulated, all right.
So you can find archives that stretch back, I don't know, 11 years or something, at wethepeopleradio.us, which is why we give you the website a lot. And those play without any interruption.
Mm-hmm.
They are free of charge, so that's not always the case. They're little MP3 files, and you can play those free of charge. Some of them are on video. If you would like to witness the buffoonery, not just listen to it,
yeah,
you've got that available to you. And honestly, every show in a I'll put on my serious hat now that no one will believe me because they'll think I'm kidding. But every show we put on here, whatever it is we're referencing, if it exists in print or can be accessed online. So like the CIA unclassified document, The Darker Bioweapons Future, that's the title of it. God, I don't know who, they probably have the Department of Cheerful Titles churns these out for them, but back in 2003, that's what they called it, The Darker Bioweapons Future, November 3rd of 2003. And it's very interesting because it's a lovely little blueprint for the virus. It's only, let's see, it's all bullet points and it's like,
It's like 2 pages.
Yeah, a little under two pages. I've got a PDF for you and I have it on there. So if you can't load a PDF, you could read it online, but just, you know, print it on the page there. But our guest has made that available to us, and that's what we are discussing today with Peter Friedman, who we've had on for a variety of topics because he's a guy with a variety of knowledge and experience. So we appreciate you hanging with us for the whole time because this is kind of a, you know, some of this people know, but I think as we get a little farther down the trail and start connecting the dots, these are things people really have to consider. Like for the folks that have decided not to get the, you know, we'll call it the vaccine, even though we all know it's not a vaccine. But if you decided not to do that, and now you're getting leaned on by your employer, or, you know, you want to go to a cruise and they won't let you, or whatever the thing is, all these things at this point are things to consider. And for the people who have gotten this, who are developing maybe some health issues, also a point to ponder. I have a relative who's 53 who had the Pfizer shots and had a stroke a couple weeks ago with no history of that. And so it's like, well, was that the blood clot from the shots? Or I don't know. Those are the ones that are never going to really be nailed down. But I think there are a lot of people seeing issues.
Yeah.
And so before I quit my editorializing, one last real life thing. In a town not too far from here, they had 47 senior citizens in a rest home who all got the vaccine. So everybody did their dutiful diligence, got vaccinated. The old people were all vaccinated. Boom, got them all. You know, interestingly enough, they all came down with COVID a few weeks later. They all got it, and 7 of them died. So it's like...
Wow, that was helpful.
I'm sorry. I think when you do the math... Mr. Friedman's got his mental calculator out. He's already doing it. I think their odds would have been better to not get the shot at all.
Well, if they hadn't got the shot, maybe 8 would have died.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah. Are you channeling the CDC right now?
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah. So it helps.
We're gonna fire Bill. He's not allowed to channel the CDC. What the heck, Mr. Friedman?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you enjoy your little break there?
Oh, I did. I thought when you were talking about somebody being confused, I thought you were talking about me.
No, we try not to have people on that are confused because, especially when they're on the phone, it's just too hard. They won't.
Well, I'm more concerned than confused.
There you go. There's a lot of that.
Okay. Moving right along.
Yes.
I'm going to talk about 3 drugs, 2 of which you know. The third one you've never heard of, but Dr. Fauci has, because it came out of the NIH.
Oh, terrific.
And I will give you, oh yeah, no, I'll give you the actual internet address. You can read the report. Some of this stuff is amazing. I mean, these people think that we're all stupid. So let's talk about briefly hydroxychloroquine. hydroxychloroquine has been used in poorer countries all over the world with an 87.4% lower death rate per million people than the richer countries taking the vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna. Now, this is some very interesting information. This information comes from the HCQ Hotel Charlie Quebec Trial, T-R-I-A-L, hcqtrial.com. And you can get all this information right there. I mean, there's no, nobody's trying to hide this or anything. If you were to use hydroxychloroquine or HCQ early in a COVID flu situation, which is what has been touted by Dr. Peter McCullough in the FLCCC for over a year, and President Trump, too. That was probably the death knell for it. Limited use. So if you talk about these countries, Mexico, the UK, United States, Sweden, Ireland, France, Netherlands, and Canada, those are pretty, you know, wealthier countries, and, you know, they're mostly here in the West, and they should be on top of all of this stuff. They have a combined population of 663 million. The average COVID death rate per million is 630. Now let's talk about widespread early HCQ use in a population of 2 billion where the average COVID death rate is only 79.6. Okay, 79.6 versus 630 is 87% lower. Go ahead.
No, that sounds pretty dangerous to me. I don't know.
Just scoffing.
Yeah, the countries are Turkey, Russia, Israel, India, Algeria, Costa Rica, Indonesia, the Ukraine, Morocco, Greece, and Cuba. They have an 87.4% lower COVID death rate per million by early intervention of hydroxychloroquine. Now, hydroxychloroquine costs about $5 a dose or less. The other stuff costs a lot more. Now, if you figure out, and this just came out, that the government is paying Walgreens, for example, $40 per injection. Walgreens came out last week and was very proud that they had now injected over 20 million people. Do the math. The taxpayers so far have paid Walgreens, not CVS, not Rite Aid, just Walgreens, close to $1 billion.
Wow.
To inject 20 million people. So now Biden is talking about 70% of the U.S. population. Well, what is 70% of the U.S. population? It's almost 250, 260 million people times $40 per shot that these people are being reimbursed. Okay, you get it for free. They can't wait to get you in there. And the government is now coming out, and Becerra just said this 2 days ago. Our buddy Xavier Becerra came out 2 days ago and on CNN and said that the government is not keeping data records on people getting the shot. Well, that's BS, because if you go into CVS or Walgreens or Rite Aid to get the vaccine, number one, you have to show ID, which, of course, black people are too stupid to be able to get. Well, according to the left, of course. Okay? They've got to show ID, and your name goes into the database the national database on who's had the vaccine and who hasn't. So, you know, it's like, what the hell is going on here? All right? The left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, or both hands are trying to finagle each other. It's all baloney.
So they are, keeping a national database on who got the shot.
Oh, absolutely. Because they can't get reimbursed if they don't put your name and your ID information off your driver's license into their database. Because then the drugstores and hospitals submit the database to HHS for reimbursement. So Becerra is flat lying that there's no national database. And he said the other day, 2 days ago, it's perfectly acceptable for the government to know who's had it and who hasn't. You know, HIPAA be damned.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, they have to know whose door to knock on here down the road and
exactly.
Convince.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You are connecting the dots. It is unbelievable. So hydroxychloroquine is a 60-year-old drug used by millions of people around the world every year. The wholesale cost is about $5 for a whole month of treatment in Africa. In the U.S., it was approved in 1955. There are 5 million prescriptions for it every year for things like malaria, rheumatoid arthritis, and lupus. 15 years ago, it was shown to work against SARS, H1N1. You got that?
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most prescribed drugs in the world, and people can take it safely for years. It is safer than Tylenol and aspirin. But Big Pharma, because the patent is run out on it, and you can get it generically for peanuts, Big Pharma doesn't make any money off it. And they can't reformulate it in order to get a new patent out. So, you know, this nonsense just goes on and on and on. Okay, so let's talk about ivermectin. The reason that the Chinese don't like Australia is because ivermectin was invented in Australia. Okay? Yes. It's an Australian drug. It's an antiviral and anti-parasite drug. It is used both in animals and human beings. It has been for years. They have discovered that if they give people ivermectin in the hospital, they tend to recover. This stuff is used all over the world. There are now 51 peer-reviewed studies from all over the world with 50 that show a clear benefit. The 51st one says, we didn't go far enough into the study. We really can't give you an opinion. So it's amazing. There's 120 actual doctors, MDs, who work with COVID patients, and many of them are connected with the FLCCC, the frontline doctors, who have written several letters saying that this 51st study is completely flawed. It's like the nonsense that was in The Lancet. Okay? I'm sure you're familiar with that.
And that's the hardest, that's one of the hardest parts, that even the prestigious journals and the things that used to be kind of the bulletproof source material, now we're finding, you know, that things are being either
political.
They're being changed or they're being misrepresented. We have to take another really quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Peter Friedman. You are listening to We the People, and you can always find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
So take my soul. That's what you said. But who are we to know?
ringing in your ears. You turn around, come around back on you. Well, that little white lie's catching up to you.
I think if we took out the word little, we could use that as like the soundtrack for the Fauci emails.
Yeah. Sure.
That'd be perfect. All right, Mr. Friedman.
Okay, let's go back to ivermectin for a minute. Then I'm going to tell you about the drug you don't know anything about, but Dr. Fauci does.
Oh, so we were reading your mind then.
Yeah, ivermectin was originally discovered by a Dr. Satoshi Omura. And the guy won the 2015 Nobel Prize in Medicine. Look him up.
He might know something.
Pardon me?
Yeah, he might know something.
Yeah, Dr. Omura compared ivermectin, the discovery of ivermectin, to penicillin. And he said, quote, one of the greatest discoveries of the 20th century. Ivermectin today costs about $2 a dose. It's safer than Tylenol and aspirin and most vitamins, believe it or not. And there's a whole article by Dr. Pierre Corey of the FLCCC Alliance on the FLCCC Alliance website talking about ivermectin. I mean, it's a big deal. So Facebook, Reddit, YouTube, everybody else took all of the ivermectin information and the YouTube's down. They took it down, all right, because they don't want anybody talking about that because of Big Pharma again. Remdesivir, which was formulated by Gilead Sciences here in the Bay Area, the same guys that came up with the Tamiflu, a dose of Remdesivir cost $3,000 per dose and doesn't reduce any deaths at all, and that's been proven. I mean, you can look all this stuff up. Okay. Ivermectin currently has already been adopted by 25% of the world's countries to prevent and treat COVID-19. They did a study in Bangladesh. That is the poorest country on earth. Okay. Where they have exclusively used ivermectin to combat COVID-19. And they came up with a 99% lower per capita death rate than in the United States.
Wow.
Where everybody's saying, go out there and get this vaccine. Let me tell you something. Don't come anywhere near the vaccine. Okay, so let's see. It's almost 1:30. let's talk about, a little more about ivermectin. Okay, ivermectin. It's available as a prescription medication. It's cheap. You don't use it alone. You combine it with zinc and an antibiotic. They've been using doxycycline, which is a penicillin derivative. It's already approved. Ivermectin is approved by the FDA, and it's on the World Health Organization's list of essential medicines. It's already out there. The problem is that they don't make any money off it. Big Pharma has got these HMO and hospitals like Kaiser and the rest of these guys. They've got them by the shorts. Okay? If you use that, we aren't going to help you. So, let's see. The other ivermectin. Oh, in India. This is very interesting. So, in India, and this is as current as July 3rd, a week ago, the India COVID deaths were on the rise and spiked. Let's see, where did they spike? In August of 2020, India began to use ivermectin, and they went down to less than 200 per... I'm looking at the data here, 200 per 1,000 No, 200 per million, pardon me, in February of 2021. In February of 2021, the approval of ivermectin in India was revoked, and all of a sudden it spiked to 4,000 deaths per million.
Huh.
They now reinstated ivermectin in June, on June 7th, and all of a sudden the death rate dropped, and the death rate dropped all the way down here by 75%, down to about 1,000 per million in India.
Hmm.
Okay, then we go to the Czech Republic. And when you're looking at the Czech Republic, they were already having a terrible second wave of the virus until ivermectin was approved on March 8th of this year. On June 30th, the death rate was down to 2 per day. Just amazing. Absolutely amazing. In the United States, okay, ivermectin was made an option for use against COVID-19 on January 24th. Now, how many people know that? Hardly anybody.
Hardly anyone.
And most doctors won't prescribe it to you. I questioned my very expensive concierge doctor, and he said, well, no, the data doesn't show its effectiveness. Just go get the vaccine. And I said, you know something? Can you give me a referral to another doctor? So in the U.S., in November, by November 16th of 2020, that's last year, we were suffering 3,000 deaths per million. Ivermectin was approved in March of this year, and our deaths now are under 200 per million. So NIH, okay, on January 24th of this year, the NIH, National Institute of Health, approved off-label use of ivermectin, and all of a sudden our death rate started to come down. Now, let's talk about the third drug. There is an NIH paper that I discovered that found that the over-the-counter drug, you might want to write this down, N, capital N, like November, dash acetylcysteine, A-C-E-T-Y-L-C-Y-S, T-E-I-N-E, it's commonly referred to as NAC, costs almost nothing, has extremely low toxicity, and it's been FDA approved for years.
Is there a brand name for that, or is that what you look for?
That's the generic. There is no brand name that I can find.
Okay.
Because it's too cheap. Nobody wants to give it a brand name and put it out there. Acetylcysteine. N-acetylcysteine, commonly referred to as NAC in the medical community. It's as cheap as hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, has very low toxicity, and has shown to improve therapeutic strategies for COVID-19. And this drug, just like the hydroxychloroquine and the ivermectin, in combination with other antiviral agents, has been shown to reduce hospital admission rates dramatically. And here is a paper that I found on the National Institutes of Health Library of Medicine. And it's sitting right here. I'm on the website right now. I can give you the website address if you want. It's NCBI, November, Charlie, Bravo, India, dot, November, Lima, M as in Mary, dot, NIH, dot, gov. And all you've got to do is search for the acetylcysteine, N-acetylcysteine. And there's a number of papers here. And it's amazing. I mean, in the introduction to this, here's the evidence and everything else. NAC is a precursor of the antioxidant glutathione, which has been used to loosen thick mucus in the lungs. And what is COVID-19? It's SARS. It's a severe acute respiratory disease. And it treats acetaminophen overdose for decades. NAC also boosts the immune system. This is on the NIH website. It suppresses viral replication and reduces inflammation. Well, that's all COVID-19.
Now, is that when it's taken by itself? Or you said earlier when taken in combination with other...
In combination.
And what is that?
Okay, it's a combination, again, of zinc and an antiviral antibiotic, such as doxycycline.
Okay.
Okay, so it says... In 1997, okay, 1997, it was demonstrated that oral administration of NAC, 600 milligrams twice a day, significantly improved cell-mediated immunity, shifting from energy to norm, going from bad to better in seniors. Let's see, to... foreign substances from immune cells, bacteria and viruses. NAC's treatment significantly decreased the frequency of influenza as well as the severity and duration of most symptoms. And all the charts and all the information, this is on the NIH's website. Where the hell has this been? Okay? Let's see, although the infection rates of influenza virus, the H1N1, were similar in the two groups, 25% of the virus-infected subjects in the NAC group, in the placebo group, unnecessary compromise, and it's all there. It's all there. So, like, what I sent you previously was Dr. McCulloch's protocol, and in which he said, use the ivermectin, use the hydroxychloroquine, and that whole protocol right there. Here's the whole protocol for NAC. Twice a day, okay, as soon as you develop the cough, okay, COVID-19, here's the strategy for NAC. When you develop a fever or a cough, after exposure, you're going to take oral NAC, 600 milligrams twice a day. If you wind up, you don't catch it early enough, you wind up with pneumonia, okay, you're going to take 1,200 milligrams twice a day with an NAC inhaler if it's available, okay, and then if you have acute respiratory distress syndrome, and you wind up being hospitalized, then there's more to the whole protocol here. It doesn't show any benefit after multiple organ failure. None of them do.
No.
So if you wait that long, for example, and you test positive, and your doctor says, well, wait until you need to go to the hospital, you are SOL. And I'm sure you know what that means.
Signing out later?
It's infuriating. Then they talk about a body mass index. Now, this is really interesting. Okay? The excess risk was extremely high even for people who are not morbidly obese. Developed as defined as a body mass index of 40 or more. A person between 40 and 60 years of age with a body mass index of 35. For example, someone who is 230 pounds and 5'8" had 5 times the risk of dying from COVID from a person of normal weight. And for younger adults, the excess risk was even higher. So if you have a morbidly obese teenager or something like that, the risk goes up geometrically. Okay, so what's interesting is you always hear this commercial for... what is it, what on TV, about the fat, the insulin resistant fat. okay? Mm-hmm. And it says extra fat, especially abdominal fat, secretes inflammatory cytokines. It's the cytokines that are the killer in COVID-19. Abdominal fat is a symptom of insulin resistance, which in turn is a marker for the mitochondrial damage, which in its turn will impair the immune response.
Uh-huh.
It is the cytokine storm in this disease, COVID-19, which is the killer. I find this fascinating, especially in view of the Golo commercials, or Goalie, what is it? And the guy comes out.
I don't know, but that sounds familiar.
Yeah. Now, this is even more interesting. The black ethnicity link might be associated with sickle cell issues, okay, which could wreak havoc on any added clotting. We're talking about blood clotting. The spike protein of the virus binds to at least 12 different receptors in the body, and a lot of organs can be affected, including brain damage. Oddly, the virus, COVID-19, in some instances concentrates on only one muscle. That's the tongue. People who wind up in the black community with COVID-19 wind up with an inflammation of the tongue. And the tongue gets very, very large, swollen. There have to date between 12 cases of virus-caused macroglossia, which is swollen tongue in the U.S., which is evident of black ethnicity. I just find all of this stuff, it's fascinating.
It's all right there, but instead we're hearing about all sorts of other goofy stuff. We have to take one last quick break here before we get to the top of the hour. We'll be back with our guest, Peter Friedman. You are listening to We the People, and as he's telling us these things, I'm adding them to the website for July 11th, 2021 at wethepeopleradio.us.
By lightning sounds pretty frightening, but you know the chances are so small. Stuck by bee sting, nothing but a bee thing. Better chance you're gonna buy it at the mall. But it's a 23 or 4 to 1 that you can fall in love by the end of this song. So get up, tell the bookie to bet I'm not a damn thing will go wrong. The odds are that we will probably be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright. That we will probably be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright. Odds are we gonna be alright for another night.
Only if you pay attention, don't get the shot. Listen to good information. Oh, yeah, I got to tell them to wash their hands, right? Because nobody's figured that out yet. We've got to tell the whole world to wash their hands.
Wash
that's
your
a
hands.
Brand new idea.
Don't stand too close.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. The whole 3 foot thing is
was it 3 feet now?
It was 3 feet.
We moved from Irish dad hug to
6 foot.
What's 3 feet? Because 6 feet is the Irish dad hug.
Well, you got to be within 3 feet to do the elbow bump. So I don't know.
Oh, anyway, I thought I'd put a happy song in near the end. So, Mr. Friedman, what volume of information have we cheated you out of now that you need to
do for us in
10 minutes?
Do you remember that recently when I was you and I told you about the ADR? Remember that acceptable death rate?
Mm. Oh, okay.
And I you know, and I told you about the DC 10 and how they manufactured the DC 10 by they cut corners, to economic, because economics and the actuarials, you know, helped in aviation, and decided, okay, well, let's, you know, with the DC 10 back in 1965, and they said, you know, if we could make a ton of money by, you know, just manufacturing the hydraulics from the flight controls and pull it forward of the spar, all right, rather than put the thing behind the spar to safety, you know, that we could save a lot of money by doing that. And gee whiz, you know, we're going to make, you know, 300 of these DC-10s that they're going to stay for 20 years is going to stay them. And we'll probably project for only two aircraft are going to crash because of that. And they actually figured out that only one was American Airlines that crashed because the spar flight control system was put in front of the spar, which had never been done before. They figured they were going to take two aircraft that were lost, and only one. And it was American Airlines, May 25th, coming out of Chicago. So the only plane has ever crashed for the DC-10 that they decided to make, you know, everything in front of the spar being less safe. And then they decided to the engine that they were putting the normal three engine up on the tail. And the 727, rather, Boeing had made the 727, but the engine is actually in the structure where if you take a 727 and it looks as though the engine was on the vertical stabilizer, on the tail, but it's not. That's just an air scoop. So that the engine was actually in the structure. So these guys decided that they were, and I actually watched this, you know, years ago, when these engineers with the actuaries were sitting down there at Long Beach and they were going, well, okay, we will produce efficiency and economics, all right, figuring that we will make millions of dollars in maintenance costs against making it fail-safe and far safer, and it was like 10 to 1. So they figured, okay, well, we'll lose two out of each instance with the engine on the tail, and then it was, you know, instance two aircraft would get lost, you know, because the hydraulics was ahead of the spar, and they only lost one of each. So you'd have to financially think that the actuaries who came up with this idea were highly successful. So if you apply the ADR, the acceptable death rate, and now we turn around, and I hate to apply a nefarious reason for it, and you go into these vaccines where you have treatments that are cheap and effective, that they don't carry any, you know, fail-safe effort on there, and they're making stuff that the taxpayer is spending billions of dollars on all of this worldwide, and then you get all these emails between Fauci and Peter Daszak from the EcoHealth Alliance and all of the corruption going back and forth. And then you take a look at the administration and the NIH and the emails between Fauci and Zuckerberg at Facebook and everything. That's dark. That is so unbelievably dark in the human existence, that the scientific community would now, like everything else, academia, everything else is now involved in politics and power and putting lives at risk. Even though you take a guy like Cuomo. Cuomo killed all of these people.
Yeah.
He killed all of these people, and I guarantee you that the state of New York was able to save $15 billion in Medicare, in Social Security. I really hope that this wasn't done on purpose. I really hope that politics has not killed the scientific community in medicine. Because I'm getting to the point where I don't trust anybody of these people. Mm-mm. And I got to do my own research. You know, it's just, it's frightening. It's absolutely frightening.
Well, I mean, we joke about it. We've joked about it for years. You know, ever since Ronald Reagan said, you know, the scariest thing you can hear is that the government's here and they're here to help you. But I don't think he was actually joking. And most of us who sort of laugh at that, we're not joking either. So when they come at you with, hey, we have this experimental shot and what could go wrong? And by the way, you have to take it. And would you like some candy, little girl? Oh, no, that's different. I think they're giving people hamburgers, not candy. But, you know, they're working on that. They're going to start with the white vans coming through the neighborhood, with music, right? Like the ice cream man.
Yeah. But you look at when you start looking at the dollars that are being paid out by the government for these companies to administer this shot, it starts to make sense why it's so important for everybody to get a shot. Because that gravy train's going to end at some point, and they want to get as much money as they can before this thing gets shut off. At least that's the way I kind of interpret it.
Well, not only that, but how about the depopulation issue? Okay, we talked about that with Prince Charles and the World Wildlife Fund and all of this, and we've got to get rid of people. We got to get rid of people. We got to quit using DDT and stopping malaria, because if we do that, okay, then people die in Africa from malaria, and that culls the herd.
Culls the herd, exactly. Well,
what the hell is going on?
You know, it's interesting, because if you brought up depopulation, because we've talked about it on the radio for years, but when I remember we first did a show about that. And it was kind of like, eh, boy, you know, we were verging out on the, you know, on the thin ice of the pond.
On the fringe.
Yeah, it was kind of like, oh, no, we're talking about depopulation, which kind of made us sound like lunatics. But, you know, one nice thing about the modern age and all of the surveillance and the video and all that is these people have all been captured on tape. They're all on video saying it out loud, and they actually don't seem to be hiding it very much anymore. I don't think that's actually an unpopular thing anymore.
Let me give you a thought to ponder.
Okay.
Okay. During World War II, we killed about 40 million people. Okay?
Okay.
40 million people lost their lives. Now, move into Mao Zedong and the Cultural Revolution. There's another 40 million. That the Chinese killed. Then look at Joseph Stalin, 20 million Russians. You take all of these things and you wind up with several billion people. If those people had lived, how many people would be alive today in the world?
Yeah.
It would be unlivable. It would be unsustainable. There wouldn't be enough food.
Well, you start looking at what they're doing with food. I mean, not to throw the net too wide, but, you know, all of this manipulation of water and the closure of our farmland and the prevention, actually, of us growing food. So supposedly for the benefit of fish, but if you actually know what you're talking about and you look into the fish-saving programs and you look at the data, it's not saving the fish. Actually, so it's not even doing what they say. And the fact that California lies about it all the time, they regularly do not tell people that 50% of the water in California is flushed out to the ocean. Absolutely.
That's right.
Absolutely. Flushed out to the ocean right off the top. Goodbye, 50% of the water. And then 40 goes to agriculture and 10% goes to municipalities. So why don't they tell people that as they're you know, making them all kill their yards and all that stuff, like, which the year that they did that saved, I think, 1.5% of the total water. Like, the fish would have missed it. It's just there's a lot of manipulation, and so much so that I think people kind of close down and forget sometimes that you really do have to be a little bit diligent, a little bit suspicious, and start asking some questions. You don't have to be an expert on everything, but taking things at face value, not really your best plan anymore. You really sort of have to look around and see what's being sold. I think that's why people like you are so valuable for us. We're running around doing all this other stuff. You're researching all this and bringing it to us, and thanks for that. We really appreciate it. And can you send me, since we're cutting into our last minute here, could you send me a couple of the links you were talking about? I have posted the NAC word and also the other thing you sent me. I forget what it was, or something else. I posted those both, but if you could, and the CIA report's on there. But if you could send that to me, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I'll do it.
We'll get it posted.
All right.
I will do it.
We are running away from home. You can find all this at wethepeopleradio.us. See you next week.
I don't need my own decision.